Welcome to the Anahat Yoga Podcast. My name is Silya Sridharana, and I'm passionate about making the ancient knowledge of yoga practical in our daily life. And today I have the honor of talking with Swami Karma Karuna again, and we're finishing off our topic of the chakras, looking into Manipur, Anahat, and Vishuddhi chakra. So take a few deep breaths and enjoy the talk. Warm welcome back to the Anahat podcast, Karma Karuna.
Wonderful to be here, Sridharana.
I understand that you're coming straight from a fire ritual, a havan, and I'm just curious if you have any thoughts on the importance of ritual and ceremony today, because, I mean, this is an ancient practice.
Yeah, I actually think that it's something that we're really missing in modern times. We, you know, our rituals are, I mean, we have rituals, but they're maybe not always healthy. Like we might have a ritual to drink our coffee every morning or these types of things. And in times of past, actually, ritual is very much part of cultures and societies, families, you know, even prayers before a meal or lighting a candle. In fact, I think when we were at your house, Sridharana, we lit a candle each time we had a meal. So that was a really beautiful ritual. And I think in modern times, we often don't have these moments of pause and connecting inwards. And so I think even really small rituals can be very helpful, like before we start a meeting, instead of just jumping into the meeting. For example, just now we chanted the mantra Om three times, which just shifts us from externally connected sense input to a more balanced internal connection. And something like the fire ceremony, of course, is a much more intricate ritual. And there's a lot of symbolism related to it. For example, we're invoking the different elements. We are using the central fire as a representation for spiritual life, and that inner fire, which actually is very appropriate to our topic today about Manipur, because that inner fire is also within our own body, or we consider it in our body at the digestive system level. And we also have representations of this luminous light in the heart area and the eyebrow space. So when we use a ritual and we come together with other people particularly and do, you know, certain actions which honor, I think, often what we take for granted, like we take nature for granted. It's something that we think it's there for us to provide for us, but actually throughout history, there's always been an interconnection, an interrelationship, where by honoring nature, then there's a gifting back, and that cycle continues. So the fire, the ancient fire ritual, we're doing one that's from the Vedic times, which is where also a lot of the link back into yoga practices that we carry on in this day and age occurred, but this type of fire ritual is in many, many cultures, most cultures. Like, for example, Mayan culture had types of fire rituals. I remember my teacher, Swami Naranjan, had gone to Colombia, South America, and they had the Mayan elders come and do their fire ritual. And Swamiji did the one from the Vedic times, and there was a lot of similarities. And in both cases, it was really about honoring the subtle, the elements, the connecting to that internal experience and coming together with others in community, which we call Sangha. And we often come into a space, you know, with our own head trips. Maybe we're stressed about something or distracted by something, or maybe not fully present. And so when we sit in a space with a group of people, everybody's kind of coming in their own way. And I remember it being described like we're all like clocks ticking in a room, but we're ticking at different rhythms. And as we start to come together in ritual, it creates this grandfather clock effect where over time we start to tick together. We start to come into a resonance, a rhythm. And in that way, we harmonize and support each other to be uplifted into, you know, calm, to more positive states of experience. And so I think ritual is important on so many way in so many ways. Yeah. And those are just a few. But at this time, we're actually doing a 9-day practice called an Anushtan, where we have dedicated 9 days to chanting particular mantras that relate to Mother Nature, to the feminine energy that is inherent in everything. And of course, the masculine energy is inherent in everything as well. There's a balance, but we are honoring that feminine quality at the moment in a 9-day practice. And so we are doing a lot of chanting, a lot of these rituals, and it's very uplifting, you could say.
Yeah. Mm, sounds beautiful.
It is. So I'm bringing lots of energy to share with you all today.
Yay. I was also wondering how you apply the knowledge of the chakras in your daily life.
Yeah, I think for me, the witnessing, which we have spoken about quite a lot actually in the last couple of our talks, is the key for me behind everything. And it allows me to see which level of energy I'm operating from, you know, so I can start to see when perhaps my ego gets in the way. So the ego is very much connected with Manipur, which is one of our focus points for today. The Mani means the jewels, and the Pura is city. So it's the city of jewels. And when there's a kind of the flow of energy is strong and powerful, we can be very energetic and we can use that energy in different ways. And if the ego gets in the way, then the energy is more used for me, myself, and I. Whereas when that energy is flowing in a more pure way and without ego and connected to the heart, then it's kind of for serve, love, give, and coming from more that anahata or heart chakra space. And so for me, I look a lot at the psychology of the chakras actually, and also when I'm connecting into different parts of my body that might feel out of balance, then I can relate to, that chakra center is maybe having some block or some imbalance of flow. And then I may do some yoga practice for that, or I might do some breathing practice for that, or I might take some time to contemplate, like, okay, where is that coming from? You know, if you think about the heart space, for example, when we show up in life and we have a lot of activation of emotions and they're expressed in maybe an unconscious way, that's an imbalance of the anahata and chakra, the heart center. And the other side to that is perhaps we feel something, but we don't know how to express it, and it just gets locked down in our heart area and our chest area. And so I use the witnessing, and we did start with the witnessing for a very in a very purposeful way, because that as we activate that witnessing, it gives us the ability to look back and at what's going on in our life and notice, okay, I'm operating from ego, or maybe insecurities are or fears are arising, and then you know, the way I am expressing my life, myself and life at that moment, the root might be from fear or insecurity. And so I can kind of work with Muladhara Swadhisthan, or the root might be, there might be ego. So I can connect into Manipur and aim to work with some balancing of that, or my emotions aren't expressing in a harmonious way, or I'm expressing them in such a way where I'm, you know, maybe not conscious of how they're influencing somebody else. And that can give me information or understanding, so I can work with some compassion, or notice when I give, but with attachment, you know? So from the anahat perspective, if I serve, love, give, but I want something back, I want somebody to tell me I'm really good because I gave, then it's not selfless, you know? So for me, it's like, I see how I'm showing up in life. And I do say that a lot, because I really feel that yoga, the way to use these practices is not just to sit on the mat or not just to do your headstands, but it's how is that translating into daily life and how are we showing up? And so for me, that witnessing is behind it all. And I'm watching myself and noticing, okay, you know, what's arising? What type of thoughts are there? What type of emotions are there? What type of physical expression is there? And how does that connect into different chakra areas? And it's not exact, you know, because you can have a root, say, of fear that means you don't maybe express yourself through the heart because the fear is there. So it may be an anahat, a heart center block, but the root is also coming from maybe some fear in Muladhara. So it's not really exact, but the chakras can be a framework where we can really start to understand ourselves and our interrelationships and how we show up in the world and influence others and express ourselves. So I guess that's how I would say I use is in that way. Yeah.
Very inspiring. Thank you for sharing. So today's topic is the rest of the chakras. We have a few glimpses into each. I don't know where you want to start.
Well, I guess as a just a reminder, we kind of worked with that, you know, witnessing, or we've spoken quite a bit about that and some of the other podcasts. And then the last one, we talked about Muladhara Swadhisthan. And that's really representing the unconscious realm and the driving forces that we can't even see that can, you know, keep us condensed or contracted in particular ways of being, or, you know, fears, basic instincts. And so as we move up into the next kind of set of chakras with Manipur, which I already said is the city of jewels, that's like, that's our health, that's our energy. And if we don't feel healthy, if we don't have energy in our life, it's very difficult to lift ourselves out of unconscious patterns. And so Manipur, in a way, is spoken about as the first spiritual, the first glimpse of spiritual life. And it's the fire element, and it represents, you know, fire represents the light, and that we can see a little bit further when we're in a dark room and there's a light, you have a, you know, a torch or a candle, we have some ability to see a little bit more. And so Manipur, the fire element, which is also connected to the navel area, the digestive system. And so it's our physical energy, which from, you know, whatever we nutrients we take in and we metabolize and activate energy in our body through that physical, you know, input. But it's more than that. It's also the subtle energy. It's the storehouse of prana, the vital force, which allows us to have enough kind of inspiration and willpower to lift ourselves, for example, out of a pattern. So we, with the witnessing, we start to notice, ah, that way of being or that way of corresponding with somebody or that particular response is not helpful. It's not supporting me to be who I really want to be. And yet it's so strong, you know, these unconscious patterns that have been set since we've been in the womb or even before, when we think about the genetic material we carry through from our lineage, you know, from our history. You know, those are very strong influences. And so in order to really have that willpower, that fire, it takes energy. And we have to activate that in order to, for example, make sure we show up for some of our practice on the mat, to be able to notice with that little bit of light. And the eyes are the sense organ of Manipur. And so it's like a symbolism of seeing both externally, but also internally, seeing ourselves. And as we see more of ourselves and we have that ability to kind of step out of a pattern or to do something different. So maybe there's a impetus to be emotional or an impetus to feel angry about something or to feel judgmental or get into something, whatever it is we're stuck in, and it's individual. And if we're honest with ourselves, we all have those things that hold us back, those ways of being. And so when we notice them and we can use that vital energy to really break the pattern, to do something different, to make a new brain channel, you know, it's like I always think of it like when you're walking in a forest, if it's a small dark path and it's hard to find your way through all the bushes because it's overgrown, then you have to walk it many times. You have to take a machete and cut away, you know, all the debris and all the overgrowth. Mm. And this is very much like our own experience. We have to have enough energy to cut away that which stands in the path. And that's the energy of Manipur. Yeah.
Yep.
Does that make sense or resonate?
Yes.
And as we're, you know, as we keep walking that new path, then it becomes more of like a, you know, a bicycle path. So you can now take your bicycle. And if you keep on walking that new path, you find a new way forward with that willpower and with that energy and with that inspiration of Manipur, the city of jewels, your own health, your own kind of vitality, then the bicycle path becomes a path that a cart can go down, and finally that a car can go down, and finally it becomes a new super highway. So instead of getting stuck in that negative thought or that negative way of being or responding, we start to be able to show up in a different way. And that's kind of, I think, I feel the energy of Manipur. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think that makes very much sense. I like the image of cutting down all the branches or walking down a untrodden path.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people today feel, you know, really low on energy. There's so many things sucking your energy, like smartphones and,
absolutely,
you know, all your relations. So I think this is a big one for a lot of people.
And that's, again, even that represents Manipur, because it's like that discipline to, yes, okay, we have to move through the world, and our senses are part of giving us information in the external world. So they are needed. You know, our body is set up to give us information, but if we're always externally connected and we're always kind of in relationship with external world through people, through sense organs, through all these inputs in our phones, our TVs, all of these computers, all of that, it does waste our vitality. And this is why, even if it's only for just 5 or 10 minutes to sit with ourselves each day and take some conscious breaths, you know, like, for example, a really great practice of Manipur is simply abdominal breathing. You know, we don't need to do a complicated practice to be able to support ourselves. And when we do abdominal breathing, it turns on the vagus nerve, which is related to our relaxation response. And so if we're in a relaxed state, then we're going to be able to show up differently. And we really do get depleted by the lifestyle and everything so fast. And so if we could just take a few minutes each day to do some abdominal breathing, be with ourselves. And there's more and more information coming out about how important this area of the body is for our mental health. Like, you know, Manipur is connected to all the digestive organs, and our whole gut biome is, you know, it's connected to our immune system. So if our gut's out of balance, our immune system's out of balance. If our gut's out of balance, there's more and more proof that anxiety can be connected right back to the gut microbiome, depression, autism, mental, like degeneration of the brain. All of these things have a link back into the gut microbiome. And so the health of this area, just, you know, physically, is really important. And then, of course, there's that relationship to the mind. So whatever we can do to really calm, because so much of the root of imbalance comes from stress, which creates inflammation in the body, which creates, this overactivation, so that we're running on a treadmill through life and we're not even enjoying the beautiful present moment. So, so much to do with Manipur, this navel center that could bring about health of mind and body just by really taking a little care of that area.
Yeah, and I think it's great that you mentioned it doesn't have to be any advanced practice. Like, you get a really long way simply using abdominal breathing. And I even started doing it more conscious now as you spoke. Mm. So it's something you can apply even in the middle of a conversation or a meeting or driving your car or, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, I find that we often think that, again, we have to be on the mat and it has to be a complicated thing. But your breath, you take it wherever you go. So then you can use it wherever you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems so obvious. But the challenge is that, again, most of our experience is being driven by these unconscious patterns. And so the more we can raise that ability to see more clearly ourselves and start to make these new pathways that allow us more connection to ourselves, more calm, more have those tools. The more we practice those tools, the more they become available to us. So in the middle of wherever we are, whatever we're doing, whatever challenges arise, then we have access to them more easily because we practice them.
Yep.
Yeah.
I inherited a ring from my grandmother, and when I notice that I'm wearing that ring or I see it, that is a reminder of me to take some deep breaths. And so it's a chosen trigger, you can say, for reminding myself of these deep breaths in daily life. And I talk to other people who use, you know, apps on their phones or every time they sit down in a chair.
Beautiful. And you were speaking or asking about ritual at the beginning, and that's a type of wonderful ritual. Like, how about take 7 deep breaths before each meal, which will calm the mind, turn on the vagus nerve, and the relax and digest. And you know, the thing is if we're stressed, we're not going to digest, and then we're not going to get the distribution of the nutrients at that physical level. Because when we're in a stress state, the digestion shuts down. Like, if we have to run from a lion, we don't need to digest the food, because at that point we're prioritizing getting away from the lion. And if you don't get away from the lion, well, you're not going to need to digest the food, right? Hari Om Tat Sat. Yeah. Lion's eating you for dinner. So, the physiology, the body doesn't know the difference between your pile of emails, which feels like a lion, and I can really relate to that one because I've got a pile of them. But you know, the physiology does not know the difference between the pile of emails and a real lion chasing you. And so, you know, there we are worried about the pile of emails, and the digestion shuts down, and then our Manipur doesn't even operate properly and distribute the nutrients we need. Yeah, so very important, these calming practices. And I think it is very much related to Manipur, because if you think about the fire element, if you put oil on a fire, it's going to grow bigger. If you, use fire in the right way, it helps us to cook. It helps us to do so many amazing things. And if there's no fire, then we might be cold, or we're unable to cook or do what we need to do. So if we think of the way fire is used, we can relate to that to our own bodies and see that when it's balanced, when there's a balanced flow of it, that it supports us. Yeah.
That makes very much sense. And especially now in Norway, it's getting colder and darker pretty much every day. We have had our first frost nights, no. And so important to have this warm comfort inside. But again, not too hot, because then you just get sluggish. So.
That's right. Yeah. It's a fine line. Well, we're supposed to, we are getting longer days, but it's been raining for weeks on end. So even though our days are getting longer, it still feels kind of dark and gray at the moment. So we need a bit of fire, even though we're coming into spring, summer.
So should we go on to Anahat chakra?
Yeah. And Anahat is so important. And of course, this is where I am at the Anahat yoga retreat. So this is one of my great loves, speaking about Anahat. And Anahat symbolized by, the upward facing triangle and the downward facing triangle creating the star. So like the Star of David, and it represents this balance between the feminine and the masculine. And in the middle is the luminous flame, which is that inner light. It's the inner light within us. And Anahat is also kind of bringing us into that next aspect of expansion. It's the air element. So fire you can still see with the naked eye, but the air we don't see. It's more subtle yet again, and yet it's very powerful. And so air elements represented at Anahat, and the hands are the organ of action, and touch or feeling is that organ of perception. And so when Anahat starts to be activated, healing qualities can be very much enhanced. And like, for example, people who do body work and this type of healing often have some movement and activation in the Anahat chakra. And when we use our hands in an artistic way, for example, painting and some of these things, that's a really great way to also activate Anahat. Singing, and because Anahat translates as the unstruck sound. So it's the sound, they have that Buddhist saying where what's the sound of one hand clapping? This is the sound of Anahat. So it's the inner sound. It's not two objects meeting each other, but it's the inner sound that we hear when we go into the subtle realms of our own self. And so anything to do with, redirecting the emotion into a feeling of love for whatever your version of God, goddess, spirit is, anything to do with creativity, singing, like all these kirtans and mantras that we've just been doing for our 9 days of the goddess practice, that's all practices that really activate the Anahat chakra. And really the key is serve, love, give. And this is the essence of our tradition, actually, the Shivananda Ashram and Rikyapit, where we last met Sri Dharana. That's the motto, serve, love, give, and passed on from Swami Shivananda. And this really, you could say, that's the essence of Anahat chakra. That's how we awaken it. But of course, to really do that selflessly is something that takes time. We have to keep on purifying ourselves, because it's so easy to, love, like, if you love me, I'll love you. It's hard to love our enemies, isn't it? It's hard to love somebody who doesn't give something back or who doesn't love back. But this is a practice we can really work with to open the Anahat chakra. And I think the other thing that's really important about the Anahat chakra is that the mind is connected to it, the Manomaya Kosha. So each of the chakras also has a particular layer of expression or experience. And it's really about, there's a symbol at the Anahat chakra, which is the wish fulfilling tree. And it represents this idea that we have to have a purified mind, and we have to have a focused and clear mind, and really maintain ourselves in a positive state, because whatever we think, whatever we put energy into, we manifest. We give it somehow some type of, and that energy is coming also from Manipur, so that's the energy that, if we kind of allow that to express in a say negativity, or in as maybe something that doesn't support us or the people in our lives, or whatever it is we want to manifest, we're still giving it energy. Yeah. If our mind is in that and our focus is in that. So at Anahat chakra, because it's, everything's becoming more subtle and more gradually more intuitive and more kind of uplifted, we have to really be diligent with how we focus our mind and continue to have positivity. So I think gratitude, we're speaking about simple practices. Well, I think gratitude is one of the most powerful practices for Anahat chakra, and it's not that hard. I mean, it is hard because the mind has a tendency to go into the negativity. It's negativity bias. So our nervous system, from a survival point of view, will always see the things that could be of threat and give them more attention, give them more energy. So if we've had some type of difficulty with a type of person in the past, or some type of trauma in a particular environment, when we get to those types of environments, or we're around those types of people, we'll immediately go into a negativity or a protection type of mechanism to keep us safe. But, and this is again where that willpower of Manipur is so important, to be able to notice, and the ability of Agya Chakra, the witnessing, to be able to say, okay, that was in my past, that's not now, let me show up in a different way. Because the negativity bias will keep on taking us into whatever it is, trying to keep us safe, really. And so from the point of view of Anahat, if we can kind of bring a gratitude, that's a way of counteracting the negative bias, noticing what's positive in our lives, what do we have to be grateful for. And it can be small things. Grateful that I have a meal that's given to me, grateful that I have a warm bed to sleep in, not everybody does, grateful that maybe I've had an interaction with somebody that made me feel good. Yeah, grateful that I've had an opportunity to give to somebody else. So if we could just pick up a few little gratitudes in different parts of our day, this can really help us to stay positive and develop that quality. So even when the mind comes with its negativity, or it comes with its protections, and it's really trying its best to keep us safe, but often it misreads the situation. Yeah. So gratitude, that's a simple practice for Anahat chakra.
Yeah, and that's straight from the yoga philosophy of Santosha. I remember I read a beautiful, I think it was a blog post you had, where you mentioned different ways of practicing Santosha or this gratitude. And one that really stuck with me was that you write down a whole list, and then you do that on a regular basis. Maybe sometimes you just find one thing, other times maybe you have three things, but then after days and weeks, you can pick that up on a bad day. You suddenly have this bank, giving you, where you can take out, and as a reminder. I thought that's very beautiful.
Really beautiful. And you can have like a gratitude journal. So at the end of each day, you just write a few things. Also, I heard somebody, I've never tried that, but I think it's a wonderful idea that in the family they had like a fishbowl with no water and no fish, just the bowl. And each day everyone in the family wrote down a gratitude and put it into the bowl. And then on a day when you felt negative, you might pull one out and you might get your own or you might get somebody else's, but they were reminders. And then this family at the end of the year, they all went, they to sat together and they went through all the gratitudes together. So that sounded like a really beautiful practice that could be really simple. And again, it takes five, what, how many minutes does it take for you to sit down and write a gratitude and put it in a bowl? Not very long, So these are great techniques we could put into our lives to gradually awaken this these qualities within us.
Yeah, and I think that's a beautiful practice when you have kids. So I'm inspired now because I think that would be fun, especially if we've got some nice colored little notes and a fun crayon to write with, then it makes it interesting and such a beautiful thing to pull out around Christmas or New Year's.
Exactly. You could even have them like draw the gratitude. So if they don't have the word, they might draw something that they're grateful for.
Oh, well, we should do a whole episode on Anahat because I mean that's also the name of my yoga school
Exactly.
here.
We're
So we have
the Anahat sisters.
Yeah, we have too short time.
I agree.
But do you have anything last thing you want to say, or should we move on to Vishuddhi?
I think we can move on, but keeping that in mind, serve, love, give, those are the three qualities that we can really work on that are connected to this chakra.
Yeah, that's a good takeaway message.
Vishuddhi. So, boy, I mean, we could do a blog on each of these chakras, really. Vishuddhi translates from two roots, vishuddhi, and shuddhi means purification, and vi translates roughly like duality. And so it's the idea of beginning to transform or go beyond duality. So in life, we're constantly moved on like a pendulum of I like, I dislike, I want, I don't want, it's good, it's bad. We're constantly in between these states of experience. And Vishuddhi is when we really start to purify Vishuddhi, we're able to assimilate whatever happens in life. There's a story actually in the Puranas and one of the texts in which they speak about the gods and goddesses, and we have to realize that these are all symbolic of aspects within our own selves. So they're speaking about the gods and goddesses who are having the ocean of the mind is churned up, and in the mind, in the ocean, is all these different things that arise. So there's all the beautiful qualities, all the beautiful things, the nectar arises, and also the poison comes up. And in our own selves, we have negative qualities. That's like the poison. We have positive qualities. That's like the nectar. And all the demons and the gods and goddesses, so that's our negative parts and our positive parts, were arguing because, of course, everybody wanted the nectar, but nobody wanted the poison. So Shiva, who represents consciousness, and again, that's an aspect of our own selves. As we transform, as we purify, as we live in these higher qualities more and more and more, which is a constant, a constant work with ourselves to keep uplifting ourselves. But that idea of the eyebrow center, again, Ajna Chakra represents consciousness, and that's called Shiva consciousness, highest consciousness. So Shiva takes the poison and takes it in to his throat, and that's why many of the pictures of Shiva, you see that he's got a blue throat, because that's representing the poison that has been kind of assimilated by Shiva. So he didn't spit it out on somebody. And Vishuddhi is also about communication, And when we get upset, what happens? We spit out poison on people, don't we? Or maybe the other side of that is we don't have the ability to communicate, and we push it down and we hold it down, but we're not able to assimilate it. Kind of creates a negativity in us, and we boil over it, and we get contracted. And so often, when difficulties come or challenges in life come, it's like either we're spitting it out, and blaming something or someone, or we're taking it in and we're contracting with it. And this idea, this story is about the assimilation. So when we face the negativities, like, we can learn to go beyond it. We can learn to use it for our growth. We can be able to go beyond that duality of it's good and bad, and see, okay, a challenge in life can be actually my greatest point of growth. So Vishuddhi has a lot to do with that aspect of becoming just, more capacity in ourself to face whatever life brings us, and also then to communicate with more balance, and not from I, me, myself, and I, not from the ego. But of course, when there's more of a rajasic aspect, or more of a activated kind of imbalance of Vishuddhi, then it might be that we're communicating very well, but it's about me, myself, and I. Or if it's a condensed, or what we call tamasic aspect of Vishuddhi, it might be that we just don't have the ability to speak our truth. We just get stuck there. And then when it's really activated in a flowing, more positive way, there's an ability to express ourselves, with that heart energy, and with that wisdom energy of the eyebrow center, as compared to one of the other, either contracted or over activated ego states. So Vishuddhi has both those aspects to it. And the other thing that I would say is quite pertinent to Vishuddhi, or related, would be that the sense organs, so the vocal cords, are the organ of expression, and the ears are how we take in information, the gyanendriya, so the organ of knowledge. And so anything to do with singing and sound, vibration, and again, chanting mantra, all of these practices are really helpful. Roaring lion, ujjayi breath, all of these practices can be really helpful for our Vishuddhi chakra, and gradually supporting it to become more balanced and awakened. And I think also really practicing think before you speak. So, I love this. I don't actually know who came up with that, but think before you speak. So the T is for it. This is in English, of course, so you'll have to translate it into Norwegian. But is it true? Is it from the heart? Is it interesting? Is it needed? And is it kind? Yeah, so think before you speak. And this is something we can practice, and why Mona, or the practice of silence, which often in a retreat center or an ashram, we practice silence for certain parts of the day or the evening, which gives us an opportunity to really see what, sometimes we just say what's in our mind, and maybe it's not kind, or maybe it's not even true. It gives us an opportunity to be more observant of how we're sh again, how we're showing up, and how we express ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's very important. I like the acronym THINK. I don't know how it would work in Norwegian, but I'll try to translate it. And also not speaking, as you said, using this mauna, I think that's a very powerful practice.
Very powerful, yes. Yeah, you can learn a lot about yourself. And others, actually, by practicing a bit of mana sometimes.
Yeah. We have this expression in Norwegian that you swallow it. If it's something that you don't set a boundary, but you just allow things to happen, and then you say that you swallow it within yourself. And I just thought of that now as you spoke about Vishuddhi and how, we actually have have these sayings in our language that relates to the chakras, and that's also very interesting. Makes it less mystical.
Exactly. And I don't, I really don't think it is, of course, there's mystical aspects to it, but I think it's all very practical. It's,
yeah.
If we even think about, the areas of our bodies, for example, thymus gland is connected into that area, the lungs, the heart. So we're having physical issues in the lung or the heart or the thymus gland. That's an indication of energy not flowing properly. And you can think of it as the nervous system or the, aspects that would feed the heart, would feed the lungs. There's energy lines that are supporting those activities within our body, and if they're not flowing well, then we're not going to be optimally operating. And it's the same with the throat area, the thyroid gland, for example, the parathyroid, the throat. When we have throat issues or thyroid issues, that can be an indication that the flow of energy is not optimal. And if we look at each chakra, so there's physical aspects and very practical psychological expressions that are also connected to each of the chakras. So there is esoteric aspects, but really I feel like we just need to stick with these, even just getting our systems operating better and looking at how our emotions express and how this, the psychology of the chakras can be such a helpful framework for understanding ourselves and our world more easily. Yeah.
Yeah. And I like that with your approach to teaching the chakras, that it is very practical and very down to earth. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I've been very inspired, obviously, through the Bihar School of Yoga and Swami Satyananda and Swami Niranjanananda and Swami Satya Sangananda, because they really teach these things in a very practical way. And, it's not about sitting in lotus pose, imagining the color of the lotus in your body. it's about how do you express yourself in your world, and how do you use these techniques to show up with more balance and more wisdom and more ability to be present. That's the essence. That's what I've learned in my almost 30 years now of working with these practices and being inspired by these teachers. So can't actually take it responsibility for it. It's been gifted to me, and I feel very grateful for that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Just as finishing off, we haven't gone into talking about Sahasrara chakra, and do you want to share why not?
There's a saying that parat param, beyond the beyond. we can, of course, there's an intellectual, description that we can have for Sahasrar, but really it depicts samadhi. It depicts total enlightenment, total awakening. And to be honest, I don't have that experience. Like, I have experiences with all the other chakras, and I probably have some moments where I've felt a taste of what that is like. But of course, it's not sustained or maintained. And Swamiji speaks about, Swami Satyananda speaks in the Kundalini Tantra about how Sahasrara is really a culmination. It's not even a chakra. He doesn't speak about it like a chakra. He says it's a culmination of the awakening of all the other centers. So when we have gone through that process of purifying the chakras, awakening them, balancing the mental and physical energies represented by Ida and Pingala, awakening the flow of the energy through Shushumna, which is the spiritual energy, and rising that up into these higher centers, then we have that awakening or that total understanding, total brain experience that is represented by this thousand-petaled lotus unfolding and Sahasrara. There's, you can't really practice for Sahasrara. I feel like all the other chakras, there's practices that can support your awakening or support your purification and gradual activation of the chakras. And of course, you can do headstand, and you're going to get some pressure on that area. So There'll be some help, I suppose, but it's not something you can really practice for. And so I personally don't spend heaps of time on that because I feel like it's beyond the beyond. And you can't understand the beyond with a limited mind. And the reality is my mind's still limited. I'm still constrained by the unconscious patterns. I'm still constrained by sometimes ego or selfishness or inability to speak with balance, So as long as I'm still constrained by that, then I feel like anything I share around Sahasrara is really just intellectual knowledge. Whereas the other chakras, I feel I have some experiential. Of course, there's higher realms and there's always more to unravel and more purification to do and more balancing to continue to work on. But I can kind of connect to them and sense them in a way that I don't feel like we truly can with Sahasrara. So there is definitely theory in it, but for me, I really just try to keep things as practical as I can so that we can use it in our day-to-day life. Yeah.
And that's the important thing, as you said, and as we started out with how to use it in your daily life. So if we want to sum up a bit, you mentioned how you use the witness awareness in your daily life. And for Manipur chakra, you mentioned abdominal breathing. And for Anahat, serve, love, give. And what was your
And gratitude as
and
well.
gratitude? Yes, definitely. And for Vishuddhi, what was the main takeaway?
I think, I mean, there's so much, but I would say practicing some silence and thinking before we speak. Yeah. And also developing that quality of ability to see more clearly. So we call it Vivek, which is instead of right or wrong or getting stuck in like Vivek means discrimination, but not discrimination against another person, but the ability to discriminate between truth and non-truth, right, wrong. So again, that's the witnessing aspect that allows us to be able to notice when we are getting caught up in a particular idea or not seeing, not experiencing things from that point of view of a deeper truth. So not intellectual truth, but deep inner truth. So I think, yeah, Mona is a great practice, and thinking before we speak are really helpful.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time and sharing your knowledge.
Oh, such a pleasure. I really have been enjoying these Sridharana. So we'll have to come up with some more topics. And I know it's sometimes hard for us to connect in our time zones, but it's been so beautiful. So I do hope that we can continue to do more and inspire people with these wonderful gifts that you're creating. So thank you for all your hard work behind the scenes and for your anahat, your serve, love, give.
Well, we already have a whole list of topics. I know we've talked about having yoga nidra as a topic and the vagus nerve as a topic and yoga for women. And so we'll just have to find a new time.
All right. Wonderful. Look forward to it.
Thanks so much for listening. I'll put our web pages in the show notes if you want to connect or just look up. We have a lot of free information on both our web pages. And reminding you to use this in your daily life. So to connect with Manipur, deep breaths, to connect with Anahat, practice gratitude, and to connect with Vishuddhi, practicing mauna, or this think before you speak. So, welcome back and take care for now.